This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Like so many other things in Australian life, going to a sporting event has changed dramatically in the last 20 years or so. It used to be very simple. You'd go to the ground to see your favourite team play. You'd line up, probably in a long queue, to buy a ticket to an unreserved seat. You sat, you watched the game, and then you went home. There was very little entertainment at the ground beyond the sport that you were watching. There might be something before the game or at halftime in a grand final, but that was about it. Well, now it's all changed, and fan engagement is a vital part of the match day experience. How can fans be made to feel like a member of the team? Or what can the stadium do to make your experience a better one? Australia's leading expert in sporting fan engagement is Blair Hughes from the sports brand agency Kojo, which is Australia's leading sports agency. I've spoken to Blair Hughes several times over the last few years, but recently I got to meet him for the very first time as we spoke about what is new in fan engagement.
Good morning, Rod.
You live a life that a lot of people would dream about. Fan engagement. How important is that now? In the old days, you turned up, you watched the game, you went home. And for many people, myself included, that's still what we do. But really, that is a small part of the entertainment, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the first thing I must say is that I have a very good understanding wife now. I just recently got married and she comes to a lot of games with me as well. We just had a great time at a couple of baseball games in the US, and she's definitely learned a lot about the fan engagement stuff.
Yeah, that was on your honeymoon, we should point out.
Yeah.
In fact, you got
yes.
married over there.
Yeah, I got married over there in Vegas, which was amazing, and of course had to slip a couple of baseball games in there, but she's a big baseball fan now, so you know it was an easy decision to go to some baseball games. The fan experience stuff, you know, that if anyone follows me on Twitter, they'll see that I use that word a lot, kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you know, the game is the most important thing that fans are going for. That'll never change. And you know, we've got all these new things at the moment, esports and all this type of stuff, these non-dominant kind of traditional sports and whatnot that are coming out. But the fan engagement, the fan experience stuff is all about just trying to make sure that it's the best customer experience, the best fan experience for these people coming to games, making them feel included and as part of this community and want them to be able to come back. So it's doing all those little touches and little things to make, you know, families, and especially now with women's sport as well just taking off, it's bringing new fans in as well. So yeah, it's a lot of those little touches, but it all, to me, comes back to the customer experience as well.
So a lot of people would think, well, that means kind of this sensory overload of there's always music playing, there's always someone telling you what's going on. But in fact, at some places, in some teams, some clubs, some venues, the idea is to really dial that down because there are a lot of kids, perhaps on the autism spectrum, but that's too much. Who's doing something there?
Absolutely. And look, this is a really interesting, like I used to be a school teacher, so and definitely taught kids on the that were you know, autistic or on the ASD spectrum and whatnot. And over in the US, you've got the Cleveland Cavaliers, Everton at Goodison Park has this as well. And they have these sensory rooms and quiet spaces for families and kids with autism to be able to go in, because it's about making sure that they're still included and those families can still come to the game and enjoy it. So it's a really good thing. And also, I believe St Kilda has started to do something at the stadium in Melbourne as well. So
quite often we hear, make some noise, cheer for your team. That's too much for some kids.
Yeah,
and
definitely
for the family. So what is it? There's special rooms or special private boxes?
That's right. I believe at two of the venues, and I'm not quite sure what the one, I haven't had a chance to check the one out in Melbourne that St Kilda are sort of using, but they'll have like the activities and this quiet space basically where they can go in. A lot of the sensory objects as well, kind of thing, for these kids to be able to play with and then still, you know, be able to go out and watch the game when they want to and things like that. But at the end of the day, it all just comes back to making sure that everyone and anyone is welcome at the game. And is being looked after. So, yeah.
That includes nursing mothers too.
That's right. You know, a really interesting one that I've started to see on my US travels. It's been around for a couple of years now, but they have these mobile nursing suites. So, yeah, and of course in Australia, you know, at our stadiums we have rooms that mums can go into and breastfeed and things like that as well. But these kind of rooms, they offer, you know, a level of privacy as well kind of thing, without anyone else sort of going in there as well kind of thing, other mothers or whatnot. So they've got this space. And again, it's another way that, you know, if they want to come to the game, because mums are just as, you know, women are just as hardcore fans as blokes. So, you know, they shouldn't be excluded at the same time. So
in America, there's been battles over gender neutral bathrooms, not necessarily at sporting venues. However, sporting organizations have taken events, major events, away from states that are non-inclusive. What are we seeing on the bathroom front? Because one of the things also that people talk about is there aren't enough bathrooms for women.
Absolutely. Look, it's one of those things that goes back to making the fan experience the best thing possible. And, you know, we go on and on about, and I can be guilty of this at times, talking about all the great technology that's out there. You know, we've got all this augmented reality and mixed reality stuff. And it's fantastic because it's this new world we've got with these great technology things that some teams are using. However, at the end of the day, the core things that matter are that couch-to-couch experience and making that a seamless experience for fans. And it's making toilets with less lines or shorter lines. It's being able to go up and get a beer or whatever kind of thing and just make it a seamless process. So in the US, you know, with the gender-neutral toilets that they've got as well, it's a way, again, goes back to that inclusive factor, but it's also thinking about, you know, how can we make this venue, and, you know, through the technology part as well, there's a stadium in San Fran that shows you in the app which toilets offer the shortest lines and things
great
like
idea.
That. So that's, I guess, the technology part. Plus the thinking of the simple little touches part as well kind of thing.
Blair Hughes is our guest, fan engagement specialist at Kojo, which has recently been named the Australian Sports Agency of the Year. You can also follow him on Twitter as he goes around the world at Mr. Blair Hughes. And I tell you what, it is one of the most envy-inducing Twitter feeds I've ever seen.
You're too kind.
Now, let's talk also about sponsors, because they are just such an important part. As much as I don't necessarily like the way that they intrude on my experience, in fact, now it's starting to flip around and sponsors want to learn more from the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. But what we are sort of seeing in the sponsor and the brand space with teams, which I'm finding really interesting, is the idea that a lot of teams are kind of investing or working with sponsors who are actively going to engage with their fans and do authentic kind of activations at stadiums. So, you know, I've seen a couple of really good things in the last couple of weeks around the grounds and whatnot kind of thing. But it's interesting in that sense of trying to think of, you know, if we're going to sponsor the team, do we accept the one that's just going to give us all the money and not do anything? I saw an example recently where I was at a stadium and the sponsor booth was all set up, logos all over the place, and no one was behind the booth. A terrible look for the brand, terrible look for the team, and both of them knew it as well. But where was the person running the booth? So it was a really weird kind of setup. But I see that on my travels all the time. Sponsors who are just giving away branded pieces of paraphernalia, that then what ends up happening, fans just dump it the moment they get it, and it just ends up on the concourses or whatnot as rubbish, or scattered through the streets as fans make their way home. And it's not a good look. You don't want it, as a sponsor too, you don't want that on the ground. But it's about trying to do things that are much more authentic and hit the mark kind of thing with fans as well. So an example of that too that I was just thinking of was when I was in the US recently. I've got a mate of mine that works at the Golden State Warriors NBA team, and we went over there and had a bit of a chat, and they just sort of talked about how one of the sponsors that they've just got is a sort of an e-commerce kind of company, and so, you know, this is a way for them to be able to learn a bit more about the idea of how can we get smarter with, you know, whether it's our merchandising or sales or ticketing and things like that. So it's really interesting where it's kind of going in that space as well. So yeah.
On game day, you as a fan will engage by watching, but also maybe by taking part in some activity at halftime. But mostly you're going to encounter some kind of fan engagement when you're approaching the stadium.
Definitely, yep.
What do you see on the way in? What have you seen that you think, wow, that's a great idea and we should be doing it here?
Australia absolutely leads the way. You know, I champion fan engagement all the time and I do a lot of travel to the US. You know, last year I spent some great time in Japan and in India checking out the cricket and baseball in those places. And I've spent a lot of time in the UK as well, but we really do it so well here in Australia. And the little things that, you know, I see are potentially just having the team colours on a piece of AstroTurf for a piece of carpeted kind of AstroTurf as you walk into the stadium and it's like a members entry line right. kind of thing. I've seen some great things on sticker decals on floors that just show wayfinding. Stuff that is actually cost effective, stands out and just, again, are those little touches to help families navigating a stadium, maybe for the first time to find the fan zone or find where the sponsor is and things like that as well. But generally, you know, it all comes back to those little kind of things that are standing out for fans, and whether it's a family zone or a kids zone and things like that. We do it really well in Australia.
Okay. So once you get into the ground, that's a different experience. People have been raving about the new stadium in Perth, mm-hmm. and especially its light display. What is so different about that? Because that was really the first new major stadium built since Lang Park was redeveloped.
Adelaide Oval's had a bit of a refurb, I think, and there's a couple of other little bits and pieces.
But it was built from the ground up.
That's right.
A new stadium where there wasn't one before.
Yep.
And they've had to create something from the ground up. What did they do?
I went over for the first game, the one day over there, and from what I've seen, the production and the lighting capabilities, the audio capabilities, I did notice that the sound was much more crisp as compared. I actually spent the last couple of weeks, I was at a few games where the PA systems were really muffled and it did
terrible,
impact on, there was a kid singing a national anthem and it didn't really work because the poor kid it kept cutting out over the PA speakers. But I did find that the sound at the Perth Stadium was really crystal clear, and also the lighting display. You've got these new lights that are these called sport LED lights. And traditionally, and I'm no expert in this, but traditionally you used to be able to turn a stadium lights off if you wanted to do some kind of activation. Or when you turn the stadium on at night time or in the afternoon for a game, you would then only be able to really turn them off at night once everyone's long gone. Now you can kind of do that at stadiums, but it takes about half an hour for those lights to be able to come back on. There's workplace health and safety issues in terms of having certain lights still on and having some visibility so people don't trip over. But generally, those lights take so long to come back. So these sport LED ones, you can flick them on, flick them off, flick them on, flick them off. So that then means that you can start to create these amazing light and audio and visual kind of atmospheric synchronization kind of displays. So it's really quite interesting. And I think Perth Stadium's got a couple of things in the works, and there's already been a couple of cool things at the Adelaide Oval that uses these kind of lights as well. But this is a new type of light technology, which is coming all across the US as well. So it's great we've got it here in Australia and fans have got access to it.
Indeed. And therefore, if there is a redevelopment at the Olympic Stadium in Sydney and the football stadium, we can see a step forward even from what they're doing in Perth.
Definitely any stadium now, I would have to think that, you know, these light shows and creating these spectacles to get people off the couch watching the game at home and to get them into the stadium. Money can't buy experiences. You have to be in the stadium watching the game to get this thing that is greater than sitting at home watching it. Because that's the big struggle at the moment. The couch experience is quite good with TVs and sound and cheaper supposedly, but stadiums are working on a lot of initiatives for that stuff.
I want to talk about Wi-Fi at stadiums because that is a bugbear with me.
Yeah, go on.
When I go to major stadiums, whether it be the Sydney Cricket Ground, the football stadium, the Olympic Stadium, the Wi-Fi simply does not work. Now, they claim that it does. It does not.
I tend to agree with you. I've often been at a lot of those stadiums that you've talked to as well on major, major games. Like I was just a week before, I was at a couple of stadiums where wasn't that big of a crowd, so they didn't really tested too much. But definitely on those big game days, they really get tested and they get a lot of people on there basically using it and it builds up. So it's difficult. But it also comes down to, you know, the local capacity of those mobile booster towers and things like that that are around the venues. So it's, yeah, I know where you're coming from. And I think also probably our Australian internet, as people know, isn't the best anyway. So it's one of those issues there.
Okay, Blair Hughes is our guest. Okay, you're in the ground, of course. You might have a family, might be on your own. What about food and beverage.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very well getting a system going where you might have it delivered to your seat, but if you're out in the middle of the crowd, that's tough for the person delivering it, and you're waiting, and yet the queues are super long at a lot of these venues as well. What's being done to improve things there?
Well, definitely. And on your topic of that in-seat ordering, I mean, that was something that I tried at a stadium in San Francisco 49ers a few years ago. And it was great. You know, I was able to order a hot dog and a drink, and it came to my seat within 17 minutes. I timed it and everything like that. And I thought, this is brilliant. I'm sitting here. But at the end of the day, when you think about it, someone's cooking the food. Someone's then bringing the food down. I was in the middle of, you know, a row of 30 people or whatever. People are passing your hot dog along, and it's too many humans that are basically doing it. So it's not cost effective when you think about it, and they've realised that and they got rid of it.
Really?
Yeah, and it hasn't really picked up at any other stadium. A lot of stadiums do, you can order your beer and you can go and pick it up. But your point about lines, what I am seeing out there is that, yes, at some stadiums there's still lines because of concourse bottlenecks and things like that, but everyone, it seems, is paying with tap and go. And what that means is it's making those lines faster and faster and faster to be able to go up. And I do agree with you, definitely at times when it's either half time or the big parts of games and whatnot kind of thing, when it does get a bit crowded, yes, there are lines and those kind of things. But I think with the tap and pass, it's making it a bit easier. So there's that. There's one thing there that lines are sort of going down. One issue that the stadiums have realised is that what do fans complain about? What are the sort of pain points? And one of them is the cost of food. You know, it was costing more than the movies, and the movies are expensive enough for families to go to. So a lot of stadiums have started to do fan-first pricing. We often hear this term fan-first and whatnot. So the idea being that they'll have, you know, there's a stadium in Melbourne. They did free milk one month in April for AFL games, I think it was. And then in May, they did free fruit for kids. So these were just, you know, offers for kids. But then they did $3 pies. The MCG, I believe, was doing one for AFL as well, where you got a packet of trading cards with a little kids pack as well. So it's these kind of things where you can get these cheaper deals, and it's basically saying to fans, you know, we're showing you that we're giving better value for your money.
I love the fact about first-timers. If you are a first-time visitor to, this I think was the Giants.
The Giants, yeah, fantastic work out there. Yeah,
what do they do there?
Yeah, I was really impressed with the Giants when I visited there not too long ago, and goes back a bit to the US. I'll give you a bit of a backstory on that. When you go to a US ballpark, they have a booth pretty much at every venue that has Major League Baseball, where you can go up and you can get your first game certificate. And yes, it's designed for kids, okay? But us Aussies or tourists or whatnot, it's a cool thing to be able to take home. And, you know, when we were at Seattle Mariners, my wife Gemma and I, they did one for us where they said, you know, happy honeymoon or whatever kind of thing. Like, it's a nothing kind of thing, really, but it's just a bit of a laugh. But for kids, it's an incredible thing that they will hold on to for their lifetime. The first game that they ever attended, this first game certificate, and it's got, you know, the colours, the mascot, the logo, all those types of things. In Australia, I did see recently at the Giants, they had a thing where it was basically welcome never-beeners. So people who have never been to the game before, and it was kind of cute, you know, they've given it a name, never-beeners, and they basically get, they can go to this part outside the stadium if they say, you know, yeah, it's my first time to the game, and so they know it's their first game there. They want to make sure they have the best experience because they want to make these fans loyal for a lifetime, right? And especially if they've got kids and things like that. Now, they were getting a scarf, a little notebook on all the little information things that they need to know. They got a copy of the match day program. I think there was a lanyard as well. But then the greatest part was one of the staff members then took them to their seats from outside the stadium all the way in and took them to their seat. And I just thought that's such a brilliant idea. It's so simple. It's nothing to do with technology or anything like that. It's just a simple customer service thing, which, you know, I go on a lot of the time about, that it's just such a simple, nice thing to do. And, you know, it might be that you then just from that one simple act, get that family for 50 years or something, or generations, you know? So,
boy, a lot of adults need help being taken to their seat.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times are you at the footy or the cricket or whatever, and you're in your seat and someone thinks that's their seat, or you arrive and there's somebody there and they haven't looked at the numbers properly? It happens all the time. Yep. Blair Hughes is our guest. Seating is something that needs to be looked at. We are getting bigger than we used to be. I could not believe, the only time I ever sat in the Great Southern Stand at the MCG, how close those seats are together.
Right.
And you could not sit normally.
Yeah.
One person had to sit forward, one sat back. Yeah. I could not believe it. What are they doing with seats?
Well, look, I'm not the skinniest bloke out there either, so I can't remember the last time I was up in that area as well, but I might need to go and do a case study or something, see what it's like, a little reconnaissance mission. In the seating space in fan engagement and all this kind of thing, a lot of venues are realising, again, you know, we need to get the fans in. We need to give them stuff they can't get at home or they can't get at any other stadium, because it's a battle between stadiums and events and that kind of thing. And so the idea is that a big idea has been to basically make these really cool kind of social spaces where fans can hang out. You might have seen this the last couple of summers at the Gabba. Yes. They had the pool, which I got to spend some time in last summer for the test match, which was incredible. I took a couple of mates along and it was such a random thing being in a pool and having some beers and whatnot, watching the test match cricket and having the cricketers wave at you as well from the outfield. Wow. It was just random. You know, you've got at Geelong, they've got what I think is probably the best fan experience activation from a sponsor as well that any fan can do. And this is where you basically go into this room. It's a dark room and they've got an ex-player there and an MC, and the MC's really switched on, and that makes a big difference as well. It's not just someone they've brought in. It's all dark. You all take your seats and you're sitting around this room, and it's got a big black retractable roof, but you don't know it's going to retract. So then they basically build you up. You're here for your first game day and all that kind of thing to see the Cats, you know, and they get everyone pumped up. They pipe in audio from the change rooms and things like that, and where the players are in the sheds warming up. On the screens inside the room, they've got a pre-recorded message from the coach, the captain, and then a little bit of a run through from one of the players. And then what ends up happening is you start to see the floor retract, and then it's this transparent floor that you then look down on and you can see the players preparing for the game.
What, in the dressing room?
In the dressing room, yes, yeah. So they're all clothed, obviously. You know, they're ready to go.
So.
They're basically doing handballs and right. punts in the sheds. And it looks down on the players. They don't sort of look up. They make no interaction with the fans. I don't know whether they can actually even see if it's sort of double-sided glass or whatever kind of thing. But the idea being that these fans are then getting this inner sanctum fan portal experience, and it's genius. And a lot of people don't actually know about it.
How
and
do you get to be part of it then? Now that you've told people what the surprise
exactly.
is.
Yeah, exactly. I think you probably have to find their sponsor, sign up to whatever their sponsor does, and also probably go out and just buy a Geelong membership and try your luck kind of thing, and maybe just ask them politely. Yeah.
That is something really that is so huge in the AFL is membership of your club. League and union, soccer, they have always lagged behind. They're doing their best to catch up, but I doubt that any major rugby league team will ever have as many members, paid up members, as the big AFL teams. What are the clubs doing about that?
You know, it is interesting. I mean, I was born in Brizzy and grew up on the Broncos and rugby league, and then in the last 3 years moved to Melbourne. And from my perspective, living in Melbourne is a really interesting thing if you're a sports fan that has come from another part of Australia. You know, you've got eight or whatever it is teams in Melbourne, and I work in Richmond, and I know they've just won the premiership and whatnot, and they're still going well this year and everything. But in Richmond, there are things that you only see sort of, I think, when you're in a town in England or so where there's a Premier League team or things like that, or even a championship team or whatever, where in shop windows or a butcher's shop, they've got a jersey up and things like that. You don't kind of see that so many times with rugby league or A-League and things like that. And it just seems to be interesting in Melbourne, particularly in Richmond. I see, you know, on people's cars, they've got the flags and stickers and stuff like that. And it definitely is in rugby league and things. But in Melbourne, in terms of the memberships, you know, Richmond just ticking over 98,000 or something like that.
Does help to win.
Yes, that's right. And as long as they're not including pet memberships as well, because remember, that was taken out a couple of years ago, but I think some still maybe potentially do that. But I think they sort of cracked the whip on that one. And I know in NRL, they sort of removed that as well. But you know, at the end of the day too, when you think about it, if you are buying a membership for your pet, then, you know, you're contributing to the team. So maybe it should be included or something like that. So
Are you allowed to take your pets to the game, though?
Well, in New Zealand, they just did that recently at the stadium over there in Wellington, where they let the dogs in. And it's a big thing in the US. They do these pups and paws or something days. So, yeah.
We tend to think that our favourite sports that have always been here will always be here. You know, cricket, league, union, soccer, to a lesser extent, AFL. If there's a great example of boom and bust in Australian sport, it is the NBL, it's basketball, which was massive in the 1980s, slumped to when there was a worry that there was not going to be a national competition, and now it's on the way back up. You reckon this is a huge case study of what's happening with fan engagement?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I was talking to a couple of friends, and the NBL is such an interesting one at the moment. The fact that, obviously, I think it's a booming time because we've got some Aussies over in the NBA that are going really well, which is great. Means that a lot of, you know, fans over here are sort of following the local league as well, as a result of either some of these players coming through or just, you know, also being Aussies. But the NBL, you know, the fact that, you know, TV is up, crowds are up, streaming is up, they've done these great merch deals, it's really tapped into families as well. And the idea that they've just listened, to fans, and they have made it cool. They have really made it cool amongst kids, you know, who are teenagers and whatnot, who are sort of finding their identity, finding out what sports they like, what their mates like. There's all that peer pressure. And here's the NBL looking very cool. And it's looking really fresh, like what they're doing.
Indeed.
It's amazing, yeah. The NBL definitely innovates it in itself really well. But I have seen as well at a lot of those games, they bring some of these things from the NBA, which fans love over there. And then obviously our fans here haven't kind of seen some of these things before and are just blown away with, you know, this creativity that the teams are doing. And yeah, it's pretty cool. So,
all right. So that brings me to another thing I want to ask about, which is when we do import things. A lot of people don't like stuff from America, but at the Canberra Raiders, of course, they have the Viking clap. So there is this whole Viking thing about the Raiders, of course, but the Viking clap came from Iceland,
the football team,
at the European Championships. Yeah. But boy, when they do it at Canberra Stadium, it's an incredible, spine-tingling experience.
That's right. And look, you know, what I love about it is that it's something that was very much, yes, it came from the Icelandic and football team, and what amazing spectacle that we saw years and years ago from them. But it's been an organic fan-led kind of situation where the fans have been the ones that have started it. And whether it's some of the fan clubs within the Raiders and you know, they have a voice, other fans listen to them more than maybe they listen to the club or the HQ or whatever. But then the Canberra Raiders organisation gets on board as well and went and got them that big horn or whatever it was kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, they're then sort of investing in this great thing, this tradition that is now so ingrained into Raiders fans. It's, you know, boosted crowds. It's got more fans along. It's created this sense of community, this kind of idea that before the game, we've got our voice. And traditionally, I have seen in NRL games, you know, it gets a bit quiet, you know, when kickoff or just after kickoff kind of thing. But this has really built it up to be a really great tradition. You know, Port Adelaide, they sing the In Excess song, you know, Never Tear Us Apart before they start the game. The Cowboys are an interesting one in the NRL. I've just noticed they started giving out memberships and fan packs where fans get a little cowbell. So I thought, I wonder if that on the hill, when a player's taking a kick for goal, opposition player, all the fans on the hill ringing this little cowbell, would that be enough to put you off or something like that?
Well,
could be kind of cool.
Maybe.
You know?
I remember, though, in New Zealand, of course, those drums bang.
Yeah.
They used to drum at the Warriors games all through the game.
Yeah.
Thank God they banned vuvuzelas.
Exactly,
as well.
Yeah.
How is women's sport approaching fan engagement?
Yeah, look, I think women's sport is just incredible. I try to get out to as much as I can because the vibe at it of families and mums is incredible, the things that they're doing there. I think at the end of the day, for women's sport, fans are watching on TV because the product is still very good. You know, these are athletes and the stories behind the athletes and what they're sacrificing to be able to play these games. Fans are buying into this because they're having access now to be able to play and have pathways for these actual, you know, NRL or, it's
what about
incredible.
The fans, though? Yeah. Are girl fans different to boy fans? And the engagement there. Do they want to run on the field and play?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And kids want to dance and boys want to dance. And look, you know, I've been to a couple of netball games where they'll have hair braiding and makeup stations.
Right.
And the young boys are getting it done as well. Because, you know, it's just it's putting on the war paint kind of thing for the day and things like that. So, you know, I don't see big differences in young, you know, boy or girl kind of fan engagement kind of thing. At the end of the day, it comes back to that customer service. It comes back to making the fan experience something for families. families that they're going to choose this over something else. And look, mums control the budgets in majority of households. They're the ones saying, look, we're going to go to this or we're going to go to this. And, you know, what you're seeing with women's sport as well is the social inclusion aspect of it. It's so positive. There's so much positivity around it and people are buying into it, as I think they should be. It's great to see. So, yeah.
What is happening with eSports? eSports is a huge step forward. I can't quite see it. But then again, I go to a football game or a cricket match, I just sit in the stands passively watching the players.
Yep.
In a way, it's no different with eSports. What's happening with eSports in Australia and around the world?
In the last 12 months, and Australia is definitely leading the way in this as well, with our players and our structures and organisations around it. But eSports, you know, for anyone that doesn't know it, you know, it's this idea of online gaming, and there's all types of different games that people play. And look, it's taken off so much that, you know, the hours that people are spending streaming online on these online on sites and is just going so crazy. The money that these players are competing for is more than what some NFL players are making and things like that. It's insane. But, you know, there's brands that are getting into it, big brands, and they're realizing that, you know, there's potential here for their to sponsor, you know, these players as well. And it's packing out massive stadiums now as well. There's a stadium event in Melbourne soon. You've got sporting teams, Essendon and Adelaide, who have invested in these teams. You've got high performance centres of excellence for eSports at the SCG. It's incredible. And so it's these new sports that, you know, for so long people thought, oh, I'll never have a career or, you know, playing video games or whatnot. But now, very much so, for a small percentage anyway kind of thing, that are going to make it in this kind of stuff. Yeah, but
except that it is on TV.
Yes, it's on TV as well. I saw it on one of the channels last week, the main channels and all that. It's incredible, yeah.
I can't imagine why you would want to sit and watch somebody else play a video game, because they are just sitting there in their hoodies and their you know, tracky dacks.
And they've got uniforms now. They're branded uniforms and all that. It's changing a bit in that regard, but I know what you mean, yeah.
But you can get huge arenas.
Yep.
20,000 people watching people play video games. How big can it get, or will it plateau? And the thing is, so many people are into video games.
Yeah.
How big can it get? Are people interested in watching other people do it?
I think they are. Like, there's a huge community, an absolutely massive community, where people play these games and commentate at the same time. And people learn from these e-gamers as well. You know, they got 80,000 to 100,000 at Beijing's Olympic arena for an esports stadium event kind of thing. Like, incredible watching these players. And people are obsessed with it, and they're playing as athletes, you know. There's hours and hours of endurance of playing these ones, so much so that they're sort of saying, you know, will it be in the Olympics?
That's my question.
Yeah.
They're already saying maybe 2020. I think that's a little bit too soon. It's only a couple of years away. But are we looking at maybe a whole separate Olympics for eSports?
Well, there are already a lot of those kind of tournaments, I guess, and the thing with eSports is there's all these different types of games that you can be an eSports gamer in. So, yeah, potentially maybe there is some kind of event. Maybe there'll be a decathlon or something of eSports. It's only going to get bigger. eSports is only going to get bigger because of the digital component of it, and the fact that, you know, more and more kids are playing video games and playing online and streaming. So it's really interesting space.
Blair, thank you so much. Great to meet you after all this time. Follow at Mr. Blair Hughes on Twitter. You will be incredibly envious of what he gets to or where he goes to if you're a sporting fan. And thanks so much for coming in.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And that is Blair Hughes, Australia's leading fan engagement expert from the sports brand agency Kojo. And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.